My name is Tom King. I write Dick Grayson for DC Comics. And like everyone who loves Dick, I love the Court of Nerds.
Hello and welcome to another special edition Court of Nerds mini-cast, brought to you by the Grand Rapids Comic Con, October 21st through the 23rd at the DeVos Place. And today we are talking to a director whose work we greatly admire, the director of Ruby for Rooster Teeth, Carrie Shawcross, and we want to welcome you today. And Carrie, would you mind kind of giving your official title for all the listeners at home who might not be familiar with your work?
Hi, my name is Carrie Shawcross, and I am the director and co-writer for Ruby Volume 3.
And Carrie, we have been lucky enough to get a Blu-ray copy of this, and let me tell you, it looks even better on a giant TV than it does on a monitor. So how in the world do you guys get the fight scenes to just be as frenetic and sharp as you possibly can?
Well, thank you, for one. And I would say for the, you know, one of the biggest things behind it is just, you know, we all love animation. This year, there's a lot more animators working on the fights for obvious reasons, and they're all, you know, big fans of these, you know, big action-packed fights, and they all take these fights and really, you know, make them their own, and we work together to try and craft something that will just constantly keep the audience looking at something new. It's something we all like, so we like to give it to the audience as well.
And I'm also curious, the fight scenes, the articulation, the choreography, they're beautiful. But to incorporate these out-of-this-world weapons, does that pose a challenge, or is it more just kind of like a greater jumping-on point for you guys?
It's actually pretty fun. I mean, you know, there's obviously a challenge to creating them, but because our world is so open as it is, you know, a lot of times the creation comes from necessity. You know, for example, in Chapter 5, we have Neon Cat. We knew we wanted to have a Raver Girl, so we thought, okay, we'll give her nunchucks. But we thought, okay, well, then we've got dust in our world, so we'll give her nunchucks that can use dust. And then we thought, well, we want her to do more than one thing, so every time she snaps them, they switch between dust. Cool. You know, it's a little bit of, thankfully, because it's, you know, our own IP and the world that we're building, we just kind of go, hey, what's cool? All right, let's do that.
Do you try and get, like, the big bulky weapons in there? Or do you prefer to stay streamlined with, like, the whips that are also guns and things of that nature?
It kind of depends. I mean, we have a few characters that have giant broadswords because we like, you know, also be able to get in there. Sometimes having a slow fighter and a fast fighter is more interesting than having two fast fighters. You know, it kind of, it depends on the tone that we're going for a certain fight. You know, we had the fight in Chapter 4 where, you know, Yasuhashi gets kind of overwhelmed by Mercury's speed. To me, that is interesting on a different level than, say, you know, Neon and Yang running around. A lot of times it's based on what the character, it feels right for the character.
And probably the best weapon in the series hasn't changed all that much from its original introduction is Ruby's scythe. Will she be rebuilding it at any point, or are you just sticking with what's working?
I will say that there are some upgrades that are planned.
Mm-hmm.
Not that anything is going to happen anytime soon, but, you know, she built her own weapon, so a builder tends to want to upgrade things.
Could you hint at anything? Or is that too hush-hush at this point?
It's a little too hush-hush right now.
Okay.
It'll be cool.
Okay. Another thing I wanted to talk to you is, you're the voice of Neptune, correct?
I am.
Now, that's a fun role, but is there any other role of Team Ruby or any other team that you would also like to give a shot? Not saying that someone's going to drop out.
I auditioned for Ruby, but it just didn't work out. You know, they were looking for something else, but I thought I could have done a great Ruby Rose.
Huh.
No, I like Neptune. I enjoy voice acting, but I don't personally think I'm very good at it, so I'd prefer to stick a little bit more of a side role.
I'm also wondering, like, there's a lot of humor in the role, and all the voice actors seem to nail it pretty well. Who is, in particular, one of the biggest goofs on the cast when you're recording?
When I'm recording, it's probably a combination of either Jen Brown, who does Pyrrha, or Sam Ireland, who does Nora. They're both just really fun, and we worked with them for years on other projects as well, like RPB, some future projects I can't really talk about yet. You know, we worked with them for so long that it's always fun getting to see them and work with them. Those are usually the ones who crack up at the most.
We've got, I think you guys have some of the best music available in any anime or anything going right now.
Mm.
There has to be a sense of pride with that. And with that pride, there's got to be some improvement, maybe trying to do better each season. Season 3 has been my favorite so far. How do you see the evolution of the soundtrack and the music? over the course of these three seasons?
Well, first off, thank you. But, I mean, the biggest thanks is to Jeff and his team, Jeff Williams and Casey and everybody does a really amazing job. I think the biggest, you know, evolution the music's going to see, and I think it did in Volume 3, and I think it's going to continue to, is just, you know, as the tone of the season progress or as, you know, different moods come up for different reasons, I think that is kind of our chance to explore. But I feel like Jeff and his team have done a really good job of nailing down, this is what Ruby sounds like. And then kind of playing with that when it's presented. I mean, you know, Volume 3 had so much epic chanting kind of stuff that, you know, we're all really big fans of. And I think that's just, you know, one example of where things could go. You know, someday I'm a big fan of Samurai Champloo. Like, I want to get some hip-hop in there. You know, some more techno-y stuff. I mean, you know, we're going to get there over time. Really, there's yet to be a single thing that we've asked Jeff's team to do that they weren't going to be able to knock out. I thought that techno jazz might be the first thing to hit snag, but they knocked it out of the park right at the beginning. So I don't think there's anything that they're not capable of doing.
And you've got to be impressed with Casey Lee Williams and her development as a lead singer over the course of the couple seasons, right?
She's amazing. She's still really young, too. It boggles my mind every time.
How old is she?
Every time we hear, gosh, I want to say she's like 16 or 17.
Holy cow.
Yeah. Don't quote me on that, but she's pretty young.
Oh, wow. Do you know anything about if there are soundtracks available for a wide release or anything like that?
Volume 3 soundtrack will be, if not the same day, it will be very close to the actual shipping of the actual release date of the Volume 3 Blu-ray.
Okay.
So it's right around the corner.
And Carrie, how long have you been with the whole Ruby franchise?
Let's see. I've been with Ruby since the beginning.
Okay.
Monty and I talked about it very early on. So that's probably, 3.5 years now? And then I've been with the company for 6 years in 2 weeks.
I was curious, with Monty Ohm's passing, how did that affect not just you as an individual, but you as a director on the series?
It was, the obvious answer is it was definitely rough, you know, and it still is. It was one of those things where I definitely wanted to be able to take on more directing responsibilities, whether it be on Ruby or another show or whatever. I just didn't realize that this was going to be the circumstances in which I had to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's one of those things where, I mentioned this actually in the commentary on our disc, is we knew going into the season that it was going to be different. There was no way that it would not be different because he wasn't there. Like, that meant it was impossible for it to be the same. But it was still a show that was made by people who were influenced, inspired by him. So I think we did a pretty good job. I think the team did a really great job of keeping the spirit alive and drawing from that same source of inspiration. So, you know, it just comes down to we just do the best we can and hope it's good enough.
And speaking of the other Rooster Teeth properties, how close are all of the different ones? How much creative crossover is there?
There's a good amount of creative crossover, at least in the animation department. You know, Miles, who co-writes and co-directs on Ruby, is, you know, pretty much the lead writer and director for RVP at the moment. There is a 2D show coming up called Camp Camp that we've announced, in which Jordan, who has worked on X-Ray and Vav and RTA, but also Miles, myself, and Gray, who runs the department, all wrote for. So, I mean, in terms of inside the animation department, there's a lot of creative crossover. You know, outside of that, people in the animation department don't touch shorts or the stuff too often.
Okay.
If we see it in passing, we'll always say something, or they'll say something to us.
And I wanted to ask you this, going back to the weapons. We've talked about how they're always crazy. They're always really innovative. Is there something at the back of your mind that you would like to see, but you haven't quite figured out how to implement it yet?
If there was, I probably wouldn't say it because I want to reveal it on the show.
I like that.
It's a good answer, though. I mean, it's a good question.
And I'll end with this one.
Okay.
Season 3 had a pretty massive cliffhanger, and we won't be spoiling it in this particular episode, but will Season 4 be exploring the larger world of Remnant outside of Vale and Beacon?
Yeah, I would say, again, you know, without spoiling Volume 3, what looks, the way Volume 3 ends and what it looks like it's setting up is what it's setting up. We're going to be seeing more of the world and seeing our characters explore that.
Well, it's awesome the way it has just gone from kind of an insular one girl, one academy to just branching out to bigger and bigger. And the characters are all progressing wonderfully. And it's just been a real treat to watch the show. So
Thank you.
Carrie Shawcross, director of Volume 3 of Ruby. Carrie, is there anything else you want to plug before we let you go?
I guess the only thing would be starting May 7th for sponsors of our website. We have a new spinoff show called Ruby Chibi, which are cute little vignettes of our Ruby characters doing crazy and zany things. So if you want to get a laugh after Volume 3, that's the place to go.
That's awesome. Carrie, thank you very much for joining us today.
Cool. Thank you very much.
Hey, this is John with the Court of Nerds. Follow us on Facebook, Court of Nerds, Twitter, @Court_of_nerds. You can follow us on Snapchat court_of_nerds, and visit our website, thecourtofnerds.com.